Welcome to The Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast presented to you by LSG Media. And we're back, Jessica, for The Mallrats Season 3, Chapter 2. Are you pumped?
Oh, I'm pumped.
Yeah, let's do it. We got quarantine, we got COVID-19, we got Mallrats, we got Stranger Things.
I'm not quarantined, sadly.
I'm drinking green tea. You think it'll keep me safe?
I'm drinking red wine. Do you think that'll keep me safe?
I think it'll keep you safe more than tea, actually, unless
so
it's hot
so
enough.
Good.
Yeah, well, that's good. So here we are. We're back. And I'm pumped. You know, I just put out a little audio thing for the Without Limits Westworld podcast. Had to let them down easy and let them know we're only going to be there twice this year.
I already told them that on Facebook.
I know, but probably only 20% of them use it. So here we are, returning for our episode-by-episode discussion about Stranger Things Chapter 2, The Mallrats, Season 3 specifically. That's just Mallrats. That's
Don't
the difference.
Don't get confused. Shannen Doherty is not in this. Is it Shannen Doherty in Mallrats?
Yep.
Of course it is.
It is.
Brenda Walsh. Love her.
Brenda Walsh.
Yeah, forever.
Well, before I get pulled off into whatever random tangent you're about to go on with 90210, let's just say that it's, if you're just joining us, if you missed the first episode, and it's probably going to make sense for us to tell you, at least for the first couple here, that I am not spoiled on this. So I have not watched season three at all. It's March 28th, 2020. And I just watched episode two for the first time, and Jessica's already seen this season. So it's going to be a little bit different, almost akin to our Battlestar Galactica coverage on the Recommissioned podcast. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. It'll be a little bit different. First episode was fun. But we're in it. We're in the Stranger Things world, man.
We're in the 80s, for sure. Here. And if you didn't think that you were in the 80s, don't worry. They'll tell you at every chance they get that it is the 80s.
Yeah, what's up, man? It's there's a bunch of stuff. You know, we weren't sure how we were going to talk about this. There's a bunch of stuff I wrote down that I want to talk about. I don't know if I'm going to end up going through this sequentially. It might be easier for me to keep my head straight unless there's any big, giant chunks of topics we want to get into. There are no rules, is my point.
I'm just going to let you take the lead, and then I will give my very important and always correct opinions.
Okay. Well, I guess if I'm going to be doing this by myself, then it might be easier. If you don't have anything you want to jump in on, I might just have to go through it to get my own head around it. But the first thing I want to talk about is what you just brought up, because it's 100% true. Couldn't be more really leaning into the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, really leaning into the 80s. And look, it's fine. I mean, it's fine. I don't mind it so much. But it's also, you know, it's like, you know, it's, for example, this scene here.
First. You've never
here we are shopping.
Before, have you?
I'll skip ahead a little.
No!
Right here. Where is it? This whole montage. Yes.
Yes.
Fucking Madonna. First of all, this whole montage is hilarious. I'm getting a real sense of sarcasm from you. So I want to hear what you have to say about this whole affectation.
I have pluses and minuses as far as the mall shopping scene montage in this episode.
But you're saying 80s in general?
Yeah, I like the 80s feel of the show. I think that's part of what makes the show unique and like special.
Right.
But I do think sometimes this season they get a little too crazy. Just the Starcourt Mall and like the small businesses closing down, like that's such a great like little storyline, like this background thing about like the times, like what the 80s was like, and especially now we see there's like a little political thing about to be involved, and you know, with Hopper talking to the mayor.
Yep.
And I like that like background setup for the show, like this yes. just very 80s type thing. But I do feel like sometimes like they go like real heavy on it.
But I want to talk about that in a minute. But I do want to just say, hey, look, another retarded politician that thinks raising property taxes is capitalism. He's wrong. Okay.
Yeah, well,
that's
Joe
my
Exotic
rant.
Thought he was a libertarian, so we can't all know what we want to be when we grow up.
I don't even think he knows what one is. So anyway, it's so if we think back to when this started, think back to season one, if you can, listener at home, think back to when you first pushed play. You heard there was going to be a show, A Missing Kid, The Vanishing of Will Byers, episode one, I believe. And we're like, whoa, this is the same font that was used on the cover of It, which of course we found out later, but we looked at it and we felt something. And then we hear the music by, I believe the band is called Survive, which is like a new wave synth kind of electronic music that I actually really like that kind of music because it does kind of take me back and reminds me of a lot of cool things from the 80s, stuff like Escape from New York and John Carpenter and stuff like that. And
oh, very John Carpenter, isn't
so
it?
So John Carpenter.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah. And I only have thought of that recently because of the music for The Lost Drive-In, which we reached out to a guy who was doing music in the likeness of John Carpenter. And I was like, oh, can we use it? And he finally said yes. But yeah, and my point in this whole thing is that we were watching and we're like, wow, look at how they're dressed. Look at how they're behaving. There's a couple of songs. Oh, the kids are playing D&D. We knew we were in the 80s without being reminded we were in the 80s.
Correct.
Right? And it's almost like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like the old Al Capone story where, or anybody, pick any famous person, anybody, and for better or worse, believe me, where they just start leaning into their own public image.
Yes.
Right? It's almost like Stranger Things is going, oh, this is what we are. Now let's be what we are.
And especially because I feel like after Stranger Things, so many other movies and shows were like, thank you, we'll do that.
It was big too. At the time.
Like it became like a big mm-hmm. thing to do. And I think a lot of problems that I'll discuss, like even over the course of the season, is sometimes just leaning in too hard to things that they don't need to lean that hard into.
Okay.
Because I love the idea of Elle and Max hanging out as girls, normal fucking girls.
Yes.
Like an Elle going to
the being normal.
I'm obsessed with this. I love it.
Cool.
And then I'm like, I wish the scene was a little bit less. We're going to take our photos with somebody, like with Madonna playing in the background and dressing these cots. Like that was too much for me. It was just a little too much. I want a little less of that.
I got you. So yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I think we already know where we are. We already know what the time period is. I think when you start doing what's like music video style kind of shit, it feels like manufactured nonsense to me.
It's like,
I know I'm being super harsh on this little thing. I understand that. My concern is where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'm afraid as I move closer to the source of the smoke, I'm going to see a burning mess that is. We're going to hammer you over the head for fucking seven more episodes or however many until you go, remember the 80s? Like, yeah, definitely do.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hope they cool it a little bit.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I was going to make a reference to it, like It, like the first part of It was like
Losers Club.
No, just the leaning heavily into the 90s in that music video-ish type way and those jokes that were like with the, I want to say Backstreet Boys, but it's New Kids on the Block, with New Kids on the Block poster and the way the music and it's like the right stuff. And it's
And
you're like, okay, it's too much. We get it. It's the 90s.
Yeah, it's because it seems, because it exists outside the story.
Correct.
Right? Like these girls doing their thing, running around shopping.
That's fine.
When you start making it music video-esque, you're playing to the audience versus you're still using the story in the setting, as it were.
Right, especially for something that I think is such a good plot point that I like really like. Like I really like I like that Elle goes to Max and she wants advice. And Max is like, here's what we're going to do.
Yes.
We're going to go shopping.
Yes.
And they sit at the mall. And I love that they go shopping because that's what you do when you're a girl and you're a teenager in the 80s or the 90s or whenever. Because that's what I did. And I'm not even a girly girl. And neither is Max. And neither is Elle. It's just what you did. And it feels like so like genuine. And I love their conversation when Max says, find something that feels like you. And Elle has no idea what that means.
Right.
And she's like, not Mike, not Hopper, you. I love this.
Me too.
It is such a good thing. It's such a different side of Elle. I love to see
and
this
Max.
Out of her. And Max.
Well, probably just a more, probably, we always knew Max was tough kind of growing up with Billy, right?
Right.
So we knew she had a toughness about her.
Right.
But, you know, almost embracing you want something dynamic in your character. Every character's going to have a feminine, a masculine energy sort of, right?
And right.
And it's cool to see, like you said, two girls just being two girls in 1986.
And forget everything else like surrounding it. And I think it's important because I think there's something about, we actually talk about this like in watching like Schitt's Creek, how you have all these characters and there are these set characters who are always together. And then all of a sudden when you take these two characters who aren't normally together, like for example, like Johnny Rose and Stevie, like that's not a spoiler.
Sure.
But these two characters who for so long didn't really interact much outside of other characters. And then you suddenly put them together and it's like, okay, this is a good pairing. And like,
yes.
That's how I feel about Elle and Max. You know, all last season they were both there, but they didn't really have a strong relationship with each other. And now we're getting to see that.
You know what the greatest show to... Do you know what the greatest example of that is in TV?
You're going to say The Sopranos because you've been watching it.
Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah. Okay,
because holy shit, now Tywin's interacting with Arya? Whoa, what's this going to be like?
Yeah.
I love seeing that. You're right. I didn't even think about applying it to this show. But it's good that we busted that thing up early because I was like, we can't do this the whole season, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's cool that we busted them up. You know, it's... All drama exists because conflict is inherent in drama,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yeah.
I'm not even a fucking writer. But if you don't have conflict, you don't have drama.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a safe assumption?
Yeah.
So if you have two kids who are just, you know, making out the whole time, we knew it was
we
just-
We don't care about them.
Correct. Because it's like, there's no conflict. It's not interesting. Why am I watching this?
And this is why TV shows jump the gun on like getting characters together in relationships. And then they're like, oh, fuck, what do we do now? They're together.
Greatest,
no one cares.
Greatest tension of all time, the last 11 seasons, X-Files. They didn't fuck it up.
That's a great, no, and it's true. And there's something to that. And like, obviously on a more limited run show, you know, that's one thing. But it's true. Like you can't, this whole season can't be just like Mike and Elle being like this happy couple.
Right.
And I like that their problems are... normal kid problems.
Now, what you could do, as we both agree that conflict is inherent in drama, vital to it, I would say, you could say, okay, fine, they're lovey-dovey, but something has to infiltrate them to cause them to be at conflict with something, even if it's as a team.
Right, which is correct.
Which is what we're seeing with who? Nancy and Jonathan.
Two favorite characters on the show, for sure.
Well, here's the good news. They've really improved in one episode to me, which is thank God they're doing something. They're going out. They're investigating. They're getting to the meta plot.
Yes.
Which I think is important because they are a little bit older. I'm sure they have their own insecurities because they're not that old, but they are a little bit older and more secure in their relationship. So the best thing is to have an external force happen upon them.
Right. Because you don't want to watch now Jonathan and Nancy have a strife in their relationship because we watched that for an entire season and all we want was them to get together. Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then last season there was all this stuff with Will and like, it's, if you go back and you do that again, like you don't want strife between them. You have to give them something else to do.
Correct. 100%.
Or there's no point.
Or there's no point.
Or it's stupid.
Right. And then you have, as relationships continue to go in this show, then you have the Hopper Joyce sort of like connection. So,
which I love the way the show has always handled it.
Yes.
Where they've always obviously had legitimate feelings for each other and you ship them, but you also are like, I understand why they're not together. I think the show has always done a good job of developing their relationship in a smart way where we don't get to the point where we're like, well, what now?
Correct. Yes. And... you know, after you've said it, I've started to think about just the dynamics of putting different characters together, but a little bit more about Joyce and Hopper. Does the show, and you're not allowed to really answer this because you know, does the show get better or worse if they start to come closer together? Again, I think, maybe it's just me, but maybe as the couples get older and we're talking about a very young, I know puppy love is a bit of a pejorative, then you've got adultish, young adultish relationship, then you have, you know, middle-aged, 40-ish relationship.
Yeah.
So you have three different types of relationships. I think because the story has always been a focus on the kids, that you want to keep the kids doing kid shit and probably not having these amazingly wonderful relationships. It's also not very realistic.
Right, because obviously everybody, even... you know, you don't want to talk about like, oh, I want these like two 13-year-olds to be together. But of course you want Mike and Elle to be a couple and to go to the dance together and kiss at the end. Of course we all want that, but like they are also young kids and these are young kid problems. Like when Lucas is correct. Like, me and Max have broken up 5 times. I'm like, this is what it's like to be that age.
Sure.
That's what you do. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and when we talked last week about like, oh, it's been 6 months and you're like, oh, I didn't realize they were actually a couple. It's probably because they've broken up 5 times over 6 months. Like,
right. And we still see, of course, Will sitting in the wings. Like, again,
still.
Here's the kid who still has this issue. In this episode, it continues. The perfectly timed, can we now play D&D when they break up outside of the little bike lockup area yep. there? So funny. But we still see him sort of on the outskirts. And I'm worried, like, what are we going to do with Will? It's almost like the Duffer brothers are like, what are we going to do with Will? We've had 2 seasons where he's had to endure these weird things by himself. Is there any chemistry or dynamic that he can have with somebody else? Because everyone's starting to pair off. Dustin and Steve is another big pair off. And while we're talking about pair offs, so Dustin and Steve are pairing off. Joyce and Hopper are pairing off. They're having external conflicts. So Joyce's external conflict is the magnet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopper's is dealing with city bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And also his daughter making out.
Of course.
Well, his adopted child making
out. Of course, yes. And then we have the situation with the outsider. So a season ago, Max was an outsider.
Yes.
Now it's Robin. But let me tell you something. I really like her already. Same. I already like her.
It's hard to be in, because even when Max first came on the show, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like every time you add a new character, it's difficult.
It's scary.
Robin is instantly likable and she has such good chemistry with Steve on the show. Like they.
And Dustin.
All three of them feed off each other so well.
Yep.
They're such a good little pairing because they all have that innate chemistry where it seems so obvious that they get along and they can just play off each other so well.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't have that. I think that might be part of the problem with Will. I think that him as an actor, he doesn't have chemistry with the rest of them like they have with each other, probably because he hasn't gotten to play with them. So I always felt like Will and Jonathan had great chemistry when they were together, like acting. As brothers.
Sure. I totally forgot about that.
Whereas now I don't see him having that chemistry with these actors. And I don't think it's just sometimes
that's
you have it or you don't have it. And these kids have acted together this whole time. And Will's been acting with other people this whole time. Because like Will and Jonathan was a great dynamic.
Yep.
That we don't have anymore right now.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because they're doing different things. So it's that type of thing where sometimes that makes all the difference. Like you cast a different actress as Robin. And we're not in this episode being like, we love Robin.
Sure.
It's that feeling they all have in the way they all play off each other so well.
Yeah.
Which is why Steve is still constantly being paired off with Dustin because they have such good chemistry when they act.
Right. Absolutely. And let me tell you, the most uninteresting character at this point to me is Mike.
I don't think you're wrong.
And I don't know. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with Mike going forward. But he has just become uninteresting to me because his... And now, we're only 2 episodes in, so it's not super fair. But he was... You would say he was the leader of the group. You would say he was the rock of the group. He had a lot of interesting things going on in his life between his family, his friends, and then him trying to help his best friend outside of the purview of the parents. And then the parents become involved, and he was the center of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's the center of... I just want L.
Yeah.
So now that could change as this heats up, I'm sure, as all of these people are going to get thrown into the same boat very soon as these weirdo doppelganger things start to infiltrate their little town. And fucking Darth Rusky over here, this guy that Hopper bumps into in the bar. But it'll be interesting to see how this starts to change. But as of now, I can only judge it 2 episodes in. He has sort of been placed on the sidelines. And I don't think that's wrong. I think it's okay if the Duffer brothers are like, cool, you know, Mike was always the guy. Now we're going to shift it around a little bit. And
that's fine. Nothing, you can do that.
You can definitely do it.
It's an ensemble cast, technically.
Correct.
At the end of the day, Steve Harrington is number one every day.
Nope, he's not. You know what I thought about with Steve and Robin and Dustin? That, yes, I agree with you. They all have good chemistry. Yes, there are definitely funny moments with Steve. He definitely has good comedic timing. But I was like, he's so out of his element between Dustin and her, like as far as brains go. But then he has that thing at the end, which was kind of neat.
The music that I kept talking about. And Dustin's like, don't pay attention. It doesn't matter. It's great. That's why they're a good little trio.
Yeah,
they all have a different like skill set.
Right.
I love them as a threesome. I love them as a group. Like, I love all three of those characters. Probably, like, obviously, Steve Harrington is my favorite. But, like, they're probably, that's definitely, like, I love to watch them, whatever they're doing, because it's always entertaining. When I see Mike, I'm like, eh.
The week is long. The silver cat feeds when blue meets yellow in the west.
Yep.
Interesting.
What could it mean? One day, I'm sure we'll all know. And some of us do know already.
The week is long. The silver cat feeds when blue meets yellow in the west. When blue meets yellow in the west.
I like to even, like, try to figure it out right
now. I have very little information about this, so I have no idea. I don't know what the silver cat is, but it's probably not going to be something literal. Probably be a bit more elusive. And when the blue meets yellow in the west, I don't know, that could mean anything too. Don't know. No idea. But that's what they figure out. Totally evil Russians, Robin says, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
It's funny how they thought they were keeping it from her. She's like, you guys are really loud.
That made me laugh a lot because as a loud person, I know that struggle.
That's funny. And the cool thing that Steve figures out, which, you know, at first you're like, oh, he's definitely out of his element here. These two are more hot on the trail than he is. But then when they're walking through the mall, after decoding it, wondering what it means, he recalls the sound of his horse. I mean, he works there. He hears it all the time. And not just the music in question, but we realize at that moment, no, this was made here.
Mm-hmm. Which is important.
That's very cool. Again, this is going to get into weirdo Russian stuff with their version of the Upside Down somehow being nearby in another realm or whatever. I'm curious about that. I do like that. I like that. You can see it though, right? You can see it in the writing. It goes, the threat has to progressively change or even get bigger. Like the Hawkins lab was bad, but Russia's worse, right? In 1986. The threat has to be larger and a little bit more existential.
So yeah, for sure.
A much more bigger conflict than a simple lab that.
Yeah, because they know how to take care of that.
Yeah, it's
they
nothing.
They got that shit. Don't worry.
Go in there and get Samwise Gamgee killed. That's what you do.
Rip. Bob Newby. So sad.
But I do like that. One thing the show has always done is it's presented the main meta plot through a variety of different clues in different sections. Like it was pumpkins, which led to this with these characters, which led to this.
And the show's good about that.
We're very good about that. It's good at giving our characters something to do.
And a way to bring them all together because eventually they all need each other.
100%. Now, we haven't quite seen it all just yet. I'm curious as to if the mall meta plot is going to have some kind of fucking like connection to this whole thing. Like the mall was brought in and Klein's some kind of bad guy. By the way, the man in black, Cary Elwes, Princess Bride.
He looks so different.
He's fucking older now.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like Saw just came out like literally 5 years ago, even though I know it's probably like 20. But in my mind, I'm still like, okay, Cary Elwes, like I know he's aged in The Princess Bride, but in my mind, he hasn't aged in Saw. And so it's like uncomfortable for me to see him this old.
He still looks good though.
I like that he's playing like a dick. Like he's cool. He's good for it. He's good for the fucking mayor, like smoking a cigar and being an asshole. Like I like it.
I think Hopper thrives on an authoritarian conflict.
Yeah.
Right? Because he has that rebellious way about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good, I always think this is a good play for him to be, you know, obviously we've seen him as, you know, the swinging dick, the chief of police. I can do whatever I want. He says so in Enzo's when he takes the bottle and leaves after Joyce stands him up because she's hanging out with Mr. Clark. But I like the idea of him having this authoritarian conflict that he has to like be challenged by.
Right.
It reminds me almost like the lab. The lab had this weird authority, like, oh, government powerful. And now we're seeing it sort of personified in Larry Klein, which I almost like better because it's a character that can have characteristics. He can be interesting. I'm curious to see what they do with Cary Elwes because he is a good actor, I think. And I'm wondering how this whole thing will play out, which again, seems like just a labor, like, oh, you know, we're assembling because the mall has cost us our jobs. And this little conflict, like, well, that's life. And well, so is their ability to protest. That's life too. And he's trying to bust him on a permit, just being a prick. And apparently this guy has some sort of big thing planned and He's just like, you know what? No one's going to fucking... I love his opinion of people and their short-term memory because he's it so right.
It's right.
He's so right.
It's a great scene with the music playing in the background, the patriotic music. Oh my God, I love it. It's perfect. It's literally perfect.
He's like, they're not going to remember. I'm going to throw them a party.
It's perfect.
Baby.
He's a perfect evil politician. I love him. Big fan.
You can just say politician.
Touche.
But so yeah, that stuff's going on there. I wanted to talk about, you know, obviously a couple more things here. So I'm assuming all of our friends are going to get sucked into this at some point, and it's going to come from something. I don't know what. All we've done for the first two episodes is establish that, yes, they are still friends. Yes, they've grown up a little bit. And yes, they still spend time together and do things. And like you said, we're switching a bit. We're switching the character dynamics around a little bit. Obviously, they're going to get pulled into this. Obviously, they're going to rely on 11 again. But with 11, one thing I was thinking about with 11 was as 11 gets a little bit older and more powerful, her ability to control her power starts to become greater. And it almost starts to present a bit of a built-in Deus Ex Machina, which is like, oh, we're fucked. She just blows the guy up and we get out of it. So I'm curious, how are they going to mitigate that, number one? I'm curious, Eleven's backstory, I feel like, okay, we've established it. We know who she is. Now she has a life and she has to avoid big places and stuff like that. Obviously, that's not going to... Her staying in a cabin is boring. She needs to do shit like go to the mall with Max. But I wonder if like that dumb episode with the lost sister, I wonder if any of those characters are going to come back into this. I don't know. I'm curious as to what happens with 11 outside of Mike from a developmental standpoint, because do you just have this 13, 12 year old girl going around nuking the bad guys? That seems easy. There must be a way to neutralize her power to where they just can't rely on 11 to fix this by blowing shit up. That's something I've been thinking a lot about.
Right. For sure. It's a valid point. Honestly.
So I know it's hard because you can't really talk about it, but the rats.
Yeah, exploding rats. They have rabies. No.
What did you think when you were first watching this?
I thought rats can't have rabies. Because if an animal has rabies, bites a rat, the rat is likely going to die. Like, you don't see a lot of rabid rats in the world in general.
Yeah, if a raccoon attacks a rat, it's going to be dead.
Pretty much.
Right.
This is why, you know, fucking gerbils don't get rabies. Like, I don't know. So obviously I have a lot of opinion on the rabies, but other than that, I feel like that's such an 80s thing to think, because I feel like this is around the like time of like Cujo, like when people were like really 100%. Scared about rabies and stuff. Cause I remember being a kid and being like fucking terrified of rabies. Like and again, I now work in an animal hospital and deal with like rabies suspect pets. Like I'm rabies vaccinated for Christ's sake. But when I was a kid, like to me, rabies was fucking terrifying. And then when I got a little older, it was like fascinating for whatever reason. So like that idea of them being like, oh, rabid rats, of course, like, you know.
It's so funny you talk about the rabies scare in the 80s because holy shit, that was all the time. And it probably was because of Cujo. I never even made that connection.
Yeah, that's always what I assumed it was, because I think that that's why I was so scared of rabies was Cujo.
But there was always rabid dog.
Always. And a lot of the, well, whatever, just rabies in general, like, doesn't necessarily always manifest in violent, aggressive behavior. Sometimes it like manifests in like essentially like drunken, like stumbling, like that type of behavior. Like it's, you know, it's just weird behavior. Like I saw a coyote outside in the middle of the day the other day. I'm like, yeah, that thing probably has rabies. He's just chilling in the middle of the day. What's he doing on the main road in the middle of the day other than having rabies? The answer is nothing.
Just having rabies today.
Just having some rabies.
Just sucking them down. But what were some of you, see, because you know what happens, it's going to be hard for you to offer. So here's what we typically do when we do this on the BSG podcast. I just say, here's what I thought when I originally saw this.
Yeah.
So if it might be hard for you to do that, but sometimes that might help.
No, for sure. And it's interesting because I liked the rat thing because I find that idea of secret government working on something. Obviously, you use lab animals to test things out.
Sure.
These rats are obviously being used to test something out for a government. Some have obviously gotten out and are wreaking havoc in, you know, Hawkins.
Right. You said, so you like the idea of secret government lab animals
escaping? No, I don't. Oh, I don't like the idea of that they do that. No, but like, I think that that's a good
plot,
especially in the
80s. Yeah.
I feel like that's the type of thing where that was also another thing where I feel like there's a lot of talk about like testing on animals and all of that type of thing. And I think that that's a good way to get more information is by being like, hey, there's this weird thing with these animals, like these lab animals. Like, it's a good way to get your plot point across.
I agree. And you know what else it does? Something we talked about earlier in this episode. It brings us to the point where we go, like you just said, it has such an 80s plot feel to it. Escaped rats that have been experimented on a secret lab feels like an 80s plot. And so while you're watching it, you're like, this kind of feels like an 80s plot. And then you go, wow, this kind of feels 80s without getting hammered over the head.
Exactly.
Exactly. But I like that. I like the idea of seeing, and hopefully, I mean, speaking of getting bashed over the head, hopefully it doesn't get too ludicrous with the way Nancy's treated at work. But it's good to see her taking the initiative and getting Jonathan involved. It's good to know that he has the skill set of, number one, driving. Number two, he has a fucking camera and a willingness to go on these adventures with Nancy. Again,
yeah, if your girlfriend was that hot and you looked like Jonathan, like, wouldn't you go on all these adventures with Nancy too?
I mean, she's okay.
I mean, she's very pretty. She's a little too skinny, a little too Skeletor for me.
She looks real
thin. She probably needs to eat a cheeseburger.
She does. But
I feel like we've said this every single season we've ever covered the show, is that like Nancy needs to eat more.
I think the fucking girl lifeguard's cuter. But,
yeah, she is very cute, actually.
I especially like the way she was all laid out and conscious in the trunk.
So you like when, like, Billy's, like, choking her and you're like, yeah, this is good.
When he's like, just lay still.
This is good.
This will be over in just a minute.
Murder time.
My favorite's when he opens up that trunk and he's just like, jackpot.
Yeah, my favorite's watching this with D&D. He's like, well, that girl's in the trunk. And I'm like, yeah, no shit.
So, but no, it's, yeah, I don't know what the hell she's got going on, but she is very thin. She,
we don't know what's going on in her personal life and what she eats for lunch every day, but she should eat more. She should stop buying lunch for all the men that work there and eat a sandwich herself.
Yeah, she never has food herself. She just gives it to those guys.
She's too busy.
Gary Busey's kid.
Yeah, little Busey. Little Busey Jr.
Baby Busey.
Baby Busey.
But I don't know. It's I like the idea of them doing something to invent. This is their dynamic.
Yes.
They investigate shit. This is what they've always done. They're little investigators.
Yeah. He makes a joke and calls her Nancy Drew, Busey Jr.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's cute. It's true.
That is a good joke.
And that's like them at their best. You're correct.
It is. It's not. And I definitely was I was nervous on episode one when I was like, ugh, boring. No conflict. But now we have something for them to do. That's what we want out of an ensemble show. We want a situation where characters do shit that matters. And even though the mall montage is dumb, what does matter, to your point, which was well said, is Max and Eleven bonding, doing real shit in 1986 that girls of that age would do. And yes, Mike chasing around, and yes, Lucas being the wise guy. I like that. I like Lucas's advanced role in this season. He's really grown up, right? He's stepped up, whereas Will's kind of faded back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Mike is the least interesting, and I don't know. I'm ready to say of the three of them, I'm more interested in Lucas than all three of them.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I'm like, what's Lucas going to do? He's boyfriend girlfriend Max. He has the wisdom now. It's almost like It's almost like he's the leader because he has the wisdom in this arena, whereas Mike was the leader before. It's almost like Mike's faded back because his head's in the clouds and Lucas has stepped up.
Yeah, for sure. And see. And you mean of that three, like of Will, Dustin, and Mike? Will, Mike, and Lucas, correct?
Yeah,
You're not including Dustin.
No.
Because Dustin's the most interesting of all of them, I feel.
Right, that's why he's on his own.
And that's the thing that's interesting.
Yes.
Is that these three have stayed close and that Dustin has like got his own shit going on.
Right.
And then he like had bonded so closely with like Steve and stuff.
Because Dustin has such personality and exuberance.
Yes.
Right, he's good on camera, the actor. And it's good that he can pull other people into the gravity of his interesting plot, right? He pulls Robin and he pulls Steven. I like that. But Will, Mike, and Lucas is kind of stepping up now, which I like.
For sure.
And it makes sense to me because Will doesn't, they seem unsure what to do with Dustin. Dustin, kissing's better without teeth.
Oh, Dustin. They know what to do with Dustin.
No, I know.
Get him away from those kids.
Exactly.
Will, they do not know what to do with, which is so funny because actually Will is like so adorable. Like the actor who plays him is so cute. And like, I just want to hug him. Like, it'd be like, it's okay. You'll find your friends when you get to high school.
Right. I guess what we should probably talk about, the old lady was cute, but
the old lady. Okay. I can tell you something about the first time I watched this.
Go.
I watched this thing and everything that's happened. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this old lady? What's she gonna do?
Thought she was nuts.
And I was scared that the old lady was gonna be like something fucking evil, especially when she went down to the basement and there's a light switch at the top of the stairs and she didn't turn on that light switch. I was like, what the fuck is about to
happen?
I didn't
even notice that.
And I did. And I, again, watched it again. I'm like, yep, okay. And I remember like immediately having that feeling of there's something wrong with this lady. And there wasn't. She was just an old lady who had rats eating her fertilizer. I'm sorry I judged her. Sorry, old lady.
But yeah, it does. It's funny. If you don't know anything about vermin, you're like, it might not seem utterly bizarre for rat-eat fertilizer. You might be like,
I don't know.
Yeah. So it's almost like
fertilizer is made from manure.
Exactly. So that was my point. When they said that, I was like, well, that probably isn't super odd for these kids to be like, what? It ate fertilizer? No way. But less about the fertilizer, more about the rat exploding and moving as a fucking blob through the cage.
The way the rat was acting in the cage, like I could see why they'd be like, oh yeah, they have rabies. Like, cause I feel like that's like the stereotypical like way it's presented is like that rat like drawing. And that is like unsettling, like an Hell animal yes. behaving in that manner, which is why I do kind of like the use of like the rats in this, mm-hmm. like even more so than exploding and turning into a blob, like that unsettling, like, and this is why I think people get scared about rabies is like that unpredictable, like, unsettling behavior of an animal to me is like frightening. Like that sure. scares me. It makes me uncomfortable.
It's scarier than the whole blob piece because the blob is such a visceral fear. Whereas the rat acting weird and throwing itself at the cage and going crazy is terrifying.
Yeah.
Its behavior is weird and it's unpredictable.
Like it's like it doesn't compute for that. It to behave in that type of manner.
Correct. I like that. Does not compute.
Yep. That is correct.
When our senses reject that which must be normal, right?
Yeah, the difference between something being scary and disturbing.
Yeah, yeah. But so Billy.
Yeah.
Holy shit. So Billy had a good night. He got dragged into this place and now we see him affected. This seems to be a plot device that the Duffer brothers really like. Someone being affected.
For sure, which I understand why.
Yeah, I like it.
I am fine with them. I think Dacre Montgomery is a really good actor. And like, I like them giving him something to do. But from the start of the season, I was like, I do not want to watch the like make Billy into a good guy tour. Cause like, I'm not about that life.
Interesting.
And that,
but he's being a bad guy.
I know that. But like from the start, I'm like, is this a way to be like, he's taken over and like, we're going to make him just a sympathetic character because it's like some powers that are suddenly making him evil. And like, that was always my fear with them doing this with like Billy. I'm like, I don't want to watch the like, poor Billy, he was affected. He's really a good guy underneath. Because we all know Billy is not a nice person.
Right.
Like we watched an entire season of him essentially being like homophobic, racist, like not a good human being. And I'm not interested in seeing him
redeemed. So let me ask you a
redeemed.
Question. Is Darth Vader a good person? He destroyed a planet full of people, right? Probably worse than being mean to Lucas.
No, not to me, because I personally am affected by Lucas and not the planet that Darth Vader blew up.
Are you, though?
Yes.
But my point is this. I think it's very easy, especially nowadays, because everybody's extreme in their opinions about everything. There's no middle ground on anything, right? So it's always interesting to be like, oh, here's a character with, you would not argue, not good qualities. But then a character who gets put into a situation where he can perhaps overcome his shortcomings and do something better doesn't mean he's quote good, but it might mean that he has done something as a net positive.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that that's the thing is I think I just went into this and especially at this point where I was just like, I don't want to see like the Billy Redemption Tour. Like,
right.
Like that's not a plot line I'm interested in.
That
being said, I think Dacre Montgomery is a really, really good actor. And I'm glad they found something for him to do that is very intense.
Sure.
Because I feel like he does that very, very, very well.
Sure. And it's just personal preference. It's what you're saying you're not interested in. But here's what I will say. I do think, and I don't want to make this episode about that, but I do think that it is in today's world, it's very dangerous to take a character who may have shown bigotry towards another character and make them do positive things, because I think people are very extreme in their opinions on these things. And I think it's a dangerous ground to write in, because we can take Stringer Bell, we can take Omar, we can take all these other fucking characters, McNulty, whoever, and show them literally murder people and be like, but I'm still interested in that character.
And that's right? Like the difference. And again, not to like bring up Tiger King again, but like that's a like the point of the fact that like you can murder a bunch of people and people are like, okay. But then when you're like, you did something wrong to an animal, people are like, unacceptable. Like I can't have it.
But
it's a similar thought.
Exactly.
In something like this.
I think it lacks critical thinking, I think is my point, because you can take a person that kills people, but if they say the wrong words, suddenly they're a monster. Right.
And I am all for, if it's done properly, like redemption of a character. And I'm not saying they do or don't do any of this with Billy. I'm just saying that when the season started, I
you
was like,
nervous.
I do not want to see this, period.
Got it.
Or I will be mad, basically.
And that's, and again, I'm not saying anybody is right or wrong in their personal preference. I just like to sort of explore it critically.
If you read the shit that they wrote about like Hopper, like this season, like the people
oh my God, I'm so glad that I don't have to deal with that.
The people who got all up in arms about like Hopper and like his behavior, and don't get me wrong, there's a ton of writing mistakes they made with Hopper this season, but like the shit that people would say, I was like,
what's an example? Well, without spoilers,
he's sexist.
Oh, okay. So
constant talk about how sexist he is and how horribly he treats women.
Okay.
Because of how he treats Elle, because that he expects Joyce to meet him for dinner. Like it was literally mind blowing. Mm-hmm. People were like, we don't want to say good things happen to Hopper now. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Do you not watch him for two seasons?
I can only imagine that some of those articles brought up the dreaded phrase toxic masculinity.
Probably.
Which, by the way, if you say to somebody, then what is non-toxic masculinity? They don't have an answer.
So just being masculine
Correct.
Is toxic.
I challenge somebody to answer that question because nobody has an answer for me. I go, what's non-toxic masculinity? Tell me. Because everything you say is toxic, a lot of times, is just simple masculinity. Now, that's not to say that sometimes people with matching qualities aren't assholes. There's plenty of them. There's jails full of them. We know this. I'm not saying there isn't, but my point is, I'm sure, you know, my point in saying that is like, that's the thing people can't deal with. They can't deal with a spectrum of a personality, because and what's so fucked up about that is everybody that writes these articles has a spectrum of personality and they have their own shortcomings. But when they sit and they write about make-believe people, they can get on their high horse and pretend something, even though at the end of the day, we're all fucking full of mud because we're just people with our own insecurities and our own frailties and our own fucking problems. And I just don't like to quickly make a judgment about a person. That's not who I am. And like, there's a lot to Hopper. There's a lot to his character. And is he a little sexist? Yeah, maybe. But does that mean he's bad? I don't think so. I think people have a range of personalities. We have fathers and grandfathers that might have the same opinions of us, but they're still people that are generally speaking good.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We just get too extreme in our thinking. It's fucking crazy.
I just don't think Billy was ever presented to us as a good person.
100%.
He's only ever been presented to us as not a good human.
Now, that is a great point because they show him as a bad... He's a villain.
Correct.
Billy is a villain, right?
And he's not like a likable villain, like Stringer Bell.
Because he lacks charisma. Stringer Bell has...
It's different.
In the first season, he lacks... In the second.
But Billy, I think, is a charismatic in this like evil way. Like,
in the high school bully way. A high school bully way. He's got the high school bully charisma.
But he's crueler than a typical high school bully. And I think that's like what puts Billy in a category that makes him unlikable.
Correct. And it's and we will do a lot if somebody is interesting. Like, well, I've said this 1,000 times. Hannibal Lecter is interesting.
Love him.
He's a monster.
I'm not mad at him at all.
He's a monster.
But I read all the books.
But we're interested in him. Do you see what I'm saying? We kind of want him to get away a little bit.
And Tony Soprano is not
a good person, but he does good things a lot because he loves his family, even though he's a fucking sociopath with narcissistic tendencies. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're interested in these. Stringer Bell is like that. Avon fucking Barksdale. I'm like, I'm interested
every
in
every single character on The Wire.
Every character on The Wire. Fucking Marlo. Like, they're all awesome. Do you know what I mean? But they're not, you wouldn't be like, ugh, I'm terrified of this guy at the same time, though, right? Who knows what they're going to do?
Yeah, I think that we have not seen that out of Billy in season two.
Correct.
Billy was just presented to us as like
a foil.
A not nice person.
Correct.
Like a toxic human being.
Yeah, with exactly.
And without any type of redeeming quality.
Correct.
We've been given none of that. And we still haven't been given any of that this season.
No, he's been bad.
He's been bad too. And now we're going to see him be bad to an nth degree where we're literally watching him essentially murder someone. Like, he definitely choked her and put her in a trunk and tied her up.
He definitely, he might do 22 years for making the phone call. He's not the guy that's doing it. That's the other guy. We're going to let him go and his fat friend go.
Yeah.
Billy, on the other hand.
I feel bad for anyone who hasn't watched Tiger King. For like literally the next like 3 months, I don't know any time I'll get on this microphone and not reference that show.
No, but my point is, yes, Billy is, obviously Billy's behavior now, which funny about this is that nobody's going, ugh, disgusting Billy. Look, he brought this girl to be sacrificed.
No, we're like, cool.
Right. That's my whole fucking point. Now, in their defense, and it's weird to say it, in Billy's defense, Billy's not Billy. Correct. Billy's clearly been fucked up by a thing.
I like the way they present it and his vision and how fucked up he is.
So cool.
And I actually think they do a really, really good job with it. Better than they ever did, like, dealing with, like, Will, like, I think, being, like, I don't know. And again, I think I really like Dacre Montgomery. Like, obviously, like, he's a handsome guy, but I also think he's a really good actor.
He's got to get
Power Rangers.
No shit.
He was like the Red Ranger.
He was?
Yeah. Not the TV show, obviously, the movie.
No, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Huh.
I didn't even ever see the Power Rangers movie. And the Red Ranger wasn't even my favorite, but that's who he was. Okay. The Red Ranger was the handsome one, though, I feel. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's all I know that he's in.
But yeah, he's now in the thralls of this new monster. I love, first of all, some of the cinematics I like. I like the idea of a bunch of people getting together in the, like, it's like The Walking Dead. They're all like walking at night and then he sees himself at the front of that list. I was like, holy fuck. Mm-hmm. That is creepy as shit. I love that.
Yeah.
Because it's different. We've seen the monster shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming we're going to keep seeing monster shit. But I'm also like, can we do something that's like visually a little bit different than the doppelganger? Or the, what am I trying to say? What's it called?
I don't know what word you're trying to
The Demogorgon.
Oh.
Like a different looking. Yeah. Like, it's cool to see the enemy look like people. Because you also give the people a chance to act. Like, if you have an evil Billy, it's cool. Because the character,
you're giving him something else, yeah.
Gets to do something a bit different.
Correct.
But you're right. The visuals of that was cool. Him at the pool all fucked up. And
just stuff like that is uncomfortable and it's awkward and it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Especially in a public place like that, like seeing him be there with other people around. I always think that that's a good tactic to use.
And you're right. The Duffer brothers are like, well, we have a good actor in our hands. Probably do something with him.
Because we could easily never really see Billy as a character again. He's unnecessary if you don't do this with him.
Correct.
Like, you don't need him in the show.
Right. Yeah. What now?
They wanted to give him something to do because he's good.
And he was in the show. So now what do you do? Do you just fade him into the background?
He's just a sibling, just like anybody else. Like, you know what I mean? That was never really a main character.
Right. But I have a feeling if you just stopped showing Billy, people would be like, that's weird. That's kind of a writing.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
But like, he could have become a secondary, not important character to a degree.
It's true.
And they wanted to give him something bigger to do.
Yeah. Probably because of the actor.
Which I'm fine with.
Right. Right. I am too. Especially if you're going to use, in a way, because you said he was a toxic human being, I guess. So to show him this way makes it, we don't necessarily feel bad for him. We're just more interested in the plot line surrounding him now, as of this point.
It's interesting to think too, and like, I don't know this, but is there something to the fact that because Billy has got like this toxic personality that made him susceptible to this type of thing?
I can dig that.
And I think that's a really good.
That's a great theory.
I just came up with that right now. So I feel pretty good about it on this rewatch of the show.
Yeah, like he's closer to that energy.
Yeah.
So like he's...
Like if this was somebody else, like Jonathan isn't going to get into an accident and end up in the same type of situation.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
And it's funny to think that he was, until he got snagged, completely willing to fuck Mrs. Wheeler.
Mrs. Wheeler was almost willing to fuck him.
Despite the fact that you have this entire connection of everyone. Like... That destroys this whole neighborhood because it gets out. It always gets out. And then it's Mike's mom and it's Elle's friend. And then Max is part of, like, it's all connected. It's a fucking mess. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to go do that.
He didn't care.
Exactly. He didn't care in that moment. It was a hunt to him. It was a conquest. Mm-hmm. Right.
For sure.
So yeah, I'm very curious to see how it plays out I'm intrigued what they're going to do with Billy at this point. Like what now what, writers? Mm-hmm. What have you done? What's the situation going to be?
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm not sure. But I'm guessing if I just think about it logically from some of the stuff you said as well, how Billy was presented and how Billy is probably largely viewed, rightfully so, and how we probably are very judgmental about that whole thing, I'm guessing it's going to be hard for them to do anything redemptive with him, and I don't think he's going to last long. So my guess is Billy doesn't last long in the season, and even though Billy dies, it still is enough to cause people to be like, holy fuck, this thing killed somebody. Like, I think he's going to be... Billy's going to be used to further the rest of the characters, and I think he's going to be sacrificed because I think the Duffers are like, I don't know what to do with Billy because of what we've presented to him as him being. I think that's going to happen. I think Billy is not long for this world, I guess. That's my prediction. Yay.
Yay.
But no, good conversation overall.
Do you want to talk about Hopper and Joyce at all? They're the only people I feel like we didn't talk
about. Let's do it. Hit me.
Oh, I don't know.
So we didn't really talk much about Joyce, but yeah.
We talked a little bit about Hopper and not about Joyce.
We talked about Hopper. We didn't talk about Hopper and Joyce, but also Joyce and the Magnets. Again, we get to see Joyce involved in the investigation as well. These are all of the little portents that pop up, these grim things that are coming and oh shit, get all these characters involved in investigating. You got the rats, you got Billy, you got the Magnets.
We got the science teacher.
Got the science teacher.
Interacting with Joyce again. Weird meetup.
Fucking Clark getting ready.
Yeah, I like weird. Clark getting some screen time here over the summer.
Yep. And it's funny because of the fact that she totally spaced out her date with Hopper.
Because she was so interested in this other thing.
Right.
And something I like about Joyce is I think Joyce has had a lot of character growth from season one where everyone was like, oh, all Joyce does is like cry and like do whatever.
It's
and then,
true.
And you watched her though start to try and do more and do more. And now you still see her, like she's doing things and she wants to be involved and she's so suspicious now because of what she's been through.
Right.
But she immediately gets so wrapped up in it because of everything she's been through. This one weird thing happens and it's enough to completely throw off like the rest of her night. Like again, completely blowing off Hopper.
Totally. It's a great point.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about her, right? Anything sends her fucking haywire because she's like, what?
Like any little thing. Yeah, of course. Which totally. Is rightfully so.
Her son vanished.
And she's like, I'm going to not. And you know, she doesn't say, oh, Hopper, I'm worried about this thing. She's like,
doesn't
I'm
even
going to figure this
mind.
Out. And she sits and she reads all her books from the library. And when she realizes she can't figure out herself, she's like, who might know? She's like, head of the AV club. Let me go talk to him. Like,
yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I like that about Joyce.
Yep.
I like Joyce.
Me too. And it was cool to see her talk to Clark. And basically, he's just talking about a giant electromagnetic thing. You can throw the switch and kill the electromagnetic thing. It would be gigantic, weird. And she's like, yeah, but it happened here and here. And he's like, oh, it's coincidental.
Which is a logical thing to say. Like, hey, this is how it works. But most likely, it's like, you know, you're overly sensitive to it. Which is a fair thing to say, especially to Joyce.
Right.
With what she's been through, of course she's going to be that way.
It's almost—it's at that point where I wish Joyce would have said, come with me right now and let me show you how magnets aren't working around my house and you can tell me what the fuck's going on.
But the problem, too, is that sometimes they are on there. It happens at certain times because we watch the magnets fall down, her find them on the floor. We watch her put them back up and watch them fall again.
Right. It's intermittent. Yeah. You're saying. So, true. It's a good point.
He'd basically be like, oh, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because the switch would be back or whatever.
So most of the Joyce Hopper stuff is him gloating about scaring the shit out of Mike or intimidating Mike.
But not letting Joyce know that's exactly what he
did. Right. She's like, so what'd you do? And he's like, everything you said, all right? I improvised a little by giving the fear of God into him, showing him my revolver. No, I don't think he did that. But yeah, it's funny. He doesn't give her specifics. But what about these two did you want to talk about?
No, I did. I just didn't want to not mention the whole situation in general. Hopper, I still have the same problem with him that I had in the first episode where I feel like over two episodes, the show is like struggling and going a little bit too hard on like Hopper and his behavior and making him like too
a
much
caricature.
Of like a caricature.
Sure.
Because when Elle gets mad, she slams the door and Hopper like is eating the cereal and he like smiles. Like that's the moment.
Exactly.
And then I don't need the singing in the car gloating and then the clapping to Joyce. Like him going in to talk to Joyce and asking her out to dinner, like that's fine. But it's just a little bit too much.
Don't overdo it.
They're trying too hard and they don't need to. Because that moment of like her shutting the door and him just sitting there and eating the cereal and like the smile, that's perfect. All you need.
It's a great point.
That gets your point across. The rest is too much. You're making him into... not a whole person. Like you're making him into a caricature in regards to this issue. And right. I don't think that that's fair treatment of someone who's such a good actor and portrays his character so well that it's just not necessary, you know?
I totally agree with you. I didn't even think about just the subtle wry grin.
Yeah, it's perfect. That's all you need.
So Hopper.
And in season two, that's all you would have gotten. And they're going a little too hard on Hopper.
But I will say this, there's definitely some stuff to be critical of, but overall, I'm enjoying the season so far.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I like it so far. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
What's episode 3 called? I don't even know.
It's called something about a lifeguard.
Oh, yeah. The case of the missing lifeguard or something.
Yeah, because there is a missing lifeguard. Probably the one that Billy's had up and put in his trunk.
Probably the one that Billy's feeding to fucking shadow demons. It's called, I think it's literally called the case
of the missing lifeguard. Yeah, it is.
It is. So we will be back in about a week's time with the case of the missing lifeguard.
Yes, perhaps awesome. We shall.
Well, thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you to Jessica for joining me again. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad we're back at this.
No, thank you for joining me.
Ah, thank you. You're very welcome. All right. You guys are awesome. And again, thank you very much for tuning in to another episode of the Hawkins Report. We are out of here. Goodbye. Thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of the Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. Don't forget to visit us on the web at LiveryStreetGeek.net. That's LiveryStreetGeek.net.